The whole of the page underneath was covered with large block capitals, badly formed ones, such as a child makes when learning to write. As I moved the torch along the lines, we read, "The cat sat on the mat. The cat sat on the mat." On and on to the end of the page. "Oh, Thomas," I moaned, "we've turned his brain." "Look, this is better," said Thomas. "He's growing up." At last we saw Father's normal handwriting, at its neatest and most exquisite. I tell you, this stuff means something. There were a lot of numbered sentences, each about two or three lines long. At first I thought they were poetry. There were beautiful combinations of words, and though they were mysterious, I felt there was a meaning behind them. Then my newborn hope died suddenly. "Oh, they're clues to a crossword puzzle," I said disgustedly. "I'm not going to read any more." It had just struck me that if I didn't hurry back to the castle, I might not see Simon again before he went. "Here, come back with that torch," shouted Thomas as I started up the ladder. "There's something in all this, I'm positive." But I still didn't believe him, and for the moment I didn't much care one way or the other. My whole mind had swung back to Simon. Topaz came running downstairs from the bedroom as I went into the kitchen. "It's all right to talk. Mortmain's gone to have a bath," she said. "Oh, isn't it wonderful that he's begun to work? What did you find?" I so hated having to disappoint her that I told her Thomas might be right and I might be wrong. But the minute I mentioned the crossword puzzle, her spirit sank. "Though I'm sure he thinks he's been working," she said worriedly. "But there's no time for that now. We must do something about Simon. Cassandra, will you go with him instead of me? Then I can stay with Mortmain." My heart gave a leap. "Yes, of course I'll go." I ran upstairs and got ready. It was the wickedest moment of my life, because in spite of believing we had failed with Father, in spite of the wretchedness I had seen on Simon's face, I was wildly happy. Rose had given him up, and I was going to drive with him into the dawn. It was still dark when I ran out to the car, but there was a vague, woolly look about the sky, and the stars were dimming. Then off we went. As we drove under the chestnut tree in front of the inn, I felt a pang for Simon. Would he remember Rose's hair against its leaves? "Oh, I'll make it up to him," I told myself. "I swear I can, now that I'm free to try." It was a queer feeling driving through the sleeping villages. Gradually, the dark sky paled until it looked like faraway smoke. Before long, there was the feel of the sea in the air. The mist over the salt marshes was too thick for the sunrise to penetrate. It was like travelling through a tunnel in the clouds. "Are you sure this is where we came for the picnic?" Simon asked as we drove along the main street. "It looks different somehow." I said that was due to the summer holiday atmosphere. We didn't see a soul in the main street, but we found the front door of the one hotel open and a charwoman scrubbing the hall. She let us look at the hotel register. There was no sign of Rose's name. "I suppose she wouldn't be at the Swan," said the charwoman. "It's not rightly a hotel, but they do take one or two." I remembered it from the day of the picnic, a tiny inn right down by the sea, about a mile away. We drove along the lonely coast road. We could see the Swan from far off. It was the only building ahead of us, an old, old inn. Simon drew up just outside the door. "Someone's awake," he said, looking upwards. A window was open in the gable. A window extraordinarily like the gable window at the quays, even to the jug and basin standing there. Floating out to us came the sound of a girl's voice singing "Early One Morning." "It's Rose," I whispered. Simon looked astonished. "Are you sure?" "Certain. I'd no idea she could sing like that." He sat listening, his eyes suddenly alight. After a few seconds, she stopped singing the words and just hummed the tune. Surely she couldn't sing like that if she wasn't happy, said Simon. I forced myself to say, perhaps it's all right. Perhaps it was just nerves, as Topaz said. Shall I call up to her? Before he could answer, there was a knock on a door inside the inn. Then a man's voice said, Good morning. Are you ready to come out and bathe? I heard Simon gasp. The next instant, he had restarted the car and we shot forward. But what does it mean? I cried. That was Neil. Simon nodded. Don't talk for a bit.